A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus and said, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." He replied, "What do you wish me to do for you?" They answered, "Grant that in your glory we may sit one at your right and the other at your left." Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Can you drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" They said, "We can." Jesus said to them, "The cup that I will drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right or at my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it's been prepared." When the ten heard this, they became indignant at James and John. Jesus summoned them and said to them, "You know that those who are recognized as rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones make their authority over them felt. But it shall not be that way with you. Rather, whoever wishes to be great among you will be your servant. Whoever wishes to be the first among you will be the slave of all. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." The Gospel of the Lord. I don't know about you, but often when I read this Gospel, my first thought is, how could James and John be such dummies, you know, to go to Jesus and say, "Hey, we want to sit at your right and your left in the kingdom." They're like, haven't you guys understood, like, the most basic teaching of Jesus? And have you not understood what was in the first reading from the prophet Isaiah, where he talks about the suffering servant, that the Messiah would have to be a servant and suffer and die? That was pretty basic in the Old Testament, talking about the Messiah, who's Jesus. And then the letter to the Hebrews we just read. We have a great high priest who's passed through the heavens. You know, Jesus, that great high priest, the one who offers sacrifice for sin. That's what a priest does. They don't seem to have learned that lesson. And Jesus has to school them because they're thinking of prestige and honor. Jesus has to teach them over again, all of them, all 12, about servant leadership. That's what's at the heart of the gospel, that the leader has to be the servant. And that if you want to be the master, you have to be a slave. I remember years ago, I went to a religious house out in Chicago. I was staying over the night, and the superior was there and having something to eat with me, and there was another prior sweeping the floor in the dining room. And this superior starts telling me, you know, he's being hospitable, we're having a little conversation, and he's telling me he just got elected superior of the house last week. I said, "Oh, that's nice, welcome, congratulations, you know." And I said, "Well, who is the previous superior?" And he points at the guy who's sweeping the floor. He said, "Oh, that was him. Now he's just an ordinary friar in the monastery here." And I remember being so impressed by that, because I was in a religious order at the time where being a superior was a real big deal. But there, they just treated him as one more. And then you go from being a superior to being an ordinary friar, and you have to have that humility to do that. The problem is, we're not that much different than James and John, right? We're always looking for those privileges, we're always looking for the advantage over the others, and we're not very good at being servants, at simple, humble service. We're always calculating, what are we going to get out of it? Whether we're going to get recognized, whether people are going to take us into account. But I go back and I was trying to get inside the mindset of James and John. What were they thinking? Because Jesus was pretty clear in his preaching. You know, and it's probably the case that they were thinking of more of a worldly kingdom. Their concept of the kingdom of God was probably similar to what they saw all around them. Well, you had the Romans in charge, and they had power, they had wealth. And then they had the Pharisees and the Sadducees who ran the temple, and they had kind of carved out a niche for themselves, even though they were under the oppression of the Romans. You know, they made a deal, you know, with the Romans to stay in power. And the Romans considered them useful because they kept control of the people. So they were thinking of that, that Jesus' kingdom would be some kind of reflection of that earthly kingdom that they were used to. But not everybody thought that way. At the time of Jesus, you may have heard of the group called the Essenes. The Essenes were a group of Jews who were really intense. They took the Old Testament really seriously. And they were really anticipating the coming of a Messiah. But these guys, they went out into the desert and set up a monastery out in the desert. It's in a place called Qumran. If you ever go to the Holy Land, your tour will probably take you there because it's a fascinating place. And they lived a really monastic life where everybody was servants. Everybody had to pitch in and do the menial tasks. And they were looking forward to the day the Messiah would come. They were not at all interested in the temple in Jerusalem, because they looked at the temple and said, that's all corrupt. The Pharisees and the Sadducees are corrupt, which is very much what Jesus would say later on when he came along. But they lived a really authentic, very, very austere Judaism, strict, kosher, and so on, lots of sacrifice. And they saw themselves as servants. And that's what would prepare for the coming of the kingdom of God into the world. Not the kind of comfortable temple service. And it's a reminder to us that we need a little bit of that countercultural attitude, because, yeah, let's face it, you know, we're very much like James and John. What do we value in the world? Yeah, we value making it. We admire people for how much income they make. We look for recognition. We look for titles, job titles, honors, prestige. I had a friend back in Maryland when I worked there, and she had a son who had a really severe drug problem and went through a lot of, you know, pain and suffering through all of that. And finally, he went and got help, and it was a religious program where they had the addicts kind of live a monastic life of sacrifice and prayer. And he joined it, and it was a 3-year program, and he got sober. And he had his life changed so radically that he decided, I want to volunteer and be a missionary. And so he stayed working with the addicts. And then later on, after a year or two, he went over to another place they have in Africa. And he's working there to addicts in Africa. And he loves it. And he wants to stay and do that for the rest of his life. Now, his family, the bigger family, all the cousins, the big family they have, they got a couple of businesses. They're very successful. They were expecting this guy just to get better and come in and work in the family business. He's got no interest in it. And they think he's some kind of weirdo, because he's dedicated himself to a life of service. No? It kind of reminded me, too, the reaction of my family when I told them I was going to become a priest. They were like, what? No? I guess if it makes you happy. And they're all saying to each other, like, but he was going to go to law school. He could be somebody. No? Yeah, but a life of service is not something that fits in our cultural way of thinking anymore these days. I remember my mother saying one time that she picked our names out, all 5 kids, thinking that, you know, the acronyms, you know, our initials would be looking really good on the door of an corporate executive's office, you know, because that was her aspiration for us all. Only one of my siblings became a corporate executive, the rest of us. But it's very much the culture we're in now. Pope John Paul II used to say we're in a culture of having as opposed to a culture of being, where we judge people and we value people on what they have, what they possess, what they've achieved, what they've produced, rather than who they are and what they have made of their character. And that has consequences, no? Because we admire the wrong things. We don't value the service and the self-giving and the self-sacrifice. And we need to remember that old prayer. It's a real tough one. The Litany of Humility. If you've ever prayed it, oh my gosh. It's like we've run away from this prayer because it's so hard. From the desire of being esteemed, free me, O Jesus. From the desire of being loved, free me, O Jesus. From the desire of being extolled, free me, O Jesus. From the desire of being honored, free me, O Jesus. From the desire of being praised, free me, O Jesus. From the desire of being preferred to others, free me, O Jesus. From the desire of being consulted, free me, O Jesus. From the desire of being approved, free me, O Jesus. From the fear of being humiliated, free me, O Jesus. And then further down, that in the opinion of the world, others may increase and I may decrease. Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. That others may be praised and I go unnoticed. Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. Wow, there's anything more countercultural than that? I don't know what it is. But do we really think in terms of service? Do we create time for it ourselves? Everybody complains. If you're in any kind of civic organization, Kiwanis, Rotary Clubs, Key Clubs, whatever they might be out there, they can't get people to join. It affects our Catholic organizations too. People won't commit. And why? Because we're so busy? Yeah. What are we busy with? Too often it's acquiring, too often it's ourselves, making ourselves secure. But what kind of kingdom are we thinking about? What's the kingdom of God really about? And maybe more to the point, are we going to be comfortable? Are we going to fit into the kingdom of God if we keep being a culture of having as opposed to a culture of being? You see, our culture is very much like James and John, and sometimes it can affect us too. Maybe we need to purify that a little bit more and reflect on what we expect the kingdom of God to be. Is it for servant leaders? Or is it for people who have lived in this culture of having? You know, I think we all like to think we're going to go straight to heaven because we're good people and we haven't killed anybody and we haven't done anything terrible. But I think unless we have the heart of a servant, we're going to have a long stay, at least in purgatory, because we got to get our hearts purified for the kingdom of God. Otherwise, we won't belong there. What kind of kingdom of God are we thinking about?